This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
There's only one way and one entity and potentially one person that can save the Yankees season. Welcome, friends. It is a Tuesday edition of Carlin at 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Also on Twitter, at Chris Carlin. By all means, check us out there. On Instagram, That Guy Carlin. Throughout the course of the evening, we shall tackle Gerrit Cole's answers to accusations of using the sticky stuff. Houston at the center of a cheating scandal again. The Knicks' secret weapon, should they be able to land Damian Lillard, and who the betting favorites are right now to land Lillard. Kevin Durant firing back at one of our own, and oh yeah, one new name that apparently the Knicks are interested in. We get to it all through the course of the show. By all means, be a part of it early on the phones at 800-919-3776. We start with the Yankees prior to their matchup tonight with the Minnesota Twins. And frankly, the only person that could save the New York Yankees, believe it or not, is Rob Manfred. How do I say that? Well, it's pretty simple. When we look at everything that's gone on this season with the lack of Yankee offense that has just been astounding, and when you look at everything that has happened across Major League Baseball with the lack of offense, and you have the sticky stuff scandal that is coming out that's affecting pitchers, and they're going to start having to answer for having any sort of sticky material that they use to grip the baseball. And those punishments could be coming soon for using anything if they get caught. Well, seemingly, when you look at the numbers across the game, that's the only thing that can save the Yankees' lack of offense. I spent a couple of days going through at different times what the numbers look like across the board, because from last season, we have reached that 60-game mark, right? This year, we're about 60 in, and of course, last year was the 60-game regular season. And so, I wanted to know just how different things were overall. And here's what I can tell you. Very different. The Yankees, for example, were a team last year that had an ER, or that had an on-base percentage of 342. It's below 320 right now. It's at 317, 318. And it's not just the Yankees. There were six teams this season, six teams that have an on-base percentage that's under 300. There were two last year. It's starting to tell you exactly what's going on here. The leaders in the league in terms of on-base are nowhere near where they were last year with the teams that were terrific in that department. The Yankees haven't hit. There's no mystery there. None whatsoever. They've hit home runs, but when they have, they've been solo home runs. They haven't put people on base, which is supposed to be one of the huge tent poles, if you will, of analytics. We know this. Kevin Youkilis, the Greek god of walks. Remember that line from Moneyball? The Yankees have gotten on base in years past. And yeah, they have come up short because of situational hitting in times before. And they've come up short because they haven't been clutch enough and because they've been too reliant on the home run. Well, even their best hitter overall has had a bad year. And we could talk all you want about how the analytics last year started to indicate that DJ LeMahieu was going to have a bad season and that his ground ball numbers were going up. Can we save all that crap? The guy won the batting title. He hit 345, 350 last season. So let's not get crazy about what we started to see, and maybe we should have paid more attention to that when we were deciding whether or not we wanted to re-sign him. No. What you should pay more attention to is what's going on the field this year, because if there's anyone that can really be the poster child for offensive players who have seen their production just drop off of a cliff, seemingly out of nowhere, it's DJ LeMahieu. Wouldn't you think that there would have to be something along the lines going wrong, something a little amiss, if you will, something just off kilter about why that would happen this year versus others? He's not the only one, but from a Yankee perspective, this is the best pure hitter that you have, and his strikeouts this season are way up. In 56 games this year, he has struck out 45 times. In 50 games last year, he struck out 21. Do you think that's a coincidence that we're talking about pitchers cheating and using foreign substances on their hands and creating better spin, and it's really across the sport this season? Do we think that that's really a coincidence when you combine that with Major League Baseball making their own mistake with changing the baseball this season? They unwittingly made it impossible for their hitters to hit. So who can save this? The only guy that can save the Yankee season is Rob Manfred. Because if he actually comes out and says and lays down the law that you are going to be punished severely if you are caught using any sort of sticky substance, then you're going to see the numbers go up offensively, because pitchers are going to stop using it. They don't want to be in a situation where they're getting suspended and looking like cheaters. Because you saw what happened to guys who were in Major League, who were in Major League Baseball during the steroid era, and the guys whose numbers just seemed to fall off a cliff. As I said with Michael Dunn and Peter, I was there in spring training in 2004, the day that Jason Giambi showed up, and he looked like a senior in high school on the basketball team playing power forward at 195 pounds. Compared to what he used to be. So pitchers are seeing that right now and not wanting to get labeled as cheaters. So what will happen? Their numbers will drop off. Offensive numbers will go back up some. And the Yankees' offense hopefully will benefit from that. I'm not saying that's the only reason that the Yankees haven't been good this year. But when I look at a guy who has been nothing but consistent through the course of his career, and he's not 39, he's not 40, he's 32 years old, and we've seen his on-base percentage drop precipitously this season. We've seen his batting average down over 100 points. You look at his career, DJ LeMahieu hit 250 one season, and that was in 60 at-bats when he first came up with the Chicago Cubs. This year, he's hitting 253 in 221 at-bats. This guy is too good for that to be happening, which tells you what's happening. Everybody has a bad year. But there's a reason his nickname is the Machine, and that's why it tells me that something is really wrong. Now, if you want to look at it from a perspective of trying to fix the Yankees from within, it's the only way to do it, because the guys there are going to have to be the guys that eventually hit. Trading for pieces and really good players, pretty unlikely, I think, at this point. And going into sell mode, that feels like it's pretty unlikely right now. So it's either that or you're facing the long goodbye. So the Yankee offense desperately needs Rob Manfred to crack down on this in an incredibly harsh way, to send the message it's not going to be accepted. It may hurt Gerrit Cole, but they'll score more runs. We'll hear from Cole in just a bit on his response to being asked if he uses spider tack or whatever the sticky stuff is to help him get a better grip on the baseball. And it's a doozy of an answer. It's a doozy. You'll want to hear that in just a little bit. But right now, we hit your calls, because I can't for the life of me see any other answer right now that's going to fix the problem. One bat is not going to come in and fix the problem. The only way the problem gets fixed is if they hit better as a team. And the only way that happens to me is if this all of a sudden is discouraged in a big, big way. Just as an example, the Yankees' OPS is 100 points less this season. And it's going on all across baseball. 800-919-3776. They need this to get cracked down on in the worst way to get their offense going. So let's hit it. John in Forest Hills is going to start us off tonight on the phone lines. Johnny, what's up, big cat?
Good evening, Chris. You know, I couldn't agree more with you with the whole thing with the spine attack and pitchers getting an unfair advantage. But I think baseball has been going down this road for a while. You know, I mean, some of the things that Rob did, Manfredi, and the owners, you know, they're culpable. The seven-inning game, the shift should be illegal. It cuts down. I mean, Teixeira.
But listen, the shift was not a problem. The shift has really not been a problem the last several years up until this year. People are looking at that more because all the numbers are down. They weren't down last year. Shift was legal then. They were doing it.
And the other thing is, when they go into extra innings, they're using this California rule that they use in travel ball. You know, it's, you know, it makes you think that you need to get a guy that could bunt on the team, because, you know, you get a guy on at second base, you need to kind of move him over with no outs and then try to get a fly ball to get the run in, but or a hit.
But, now, some people, you know, like to do it thanks to the call. Some people don't. Some teams will bunt him over, some won't. That's just the way it is. And neither one of those things has anything to do with offense being down. Like, there's a difference between adapting to the times and the future, which that is, and there's then seeing a massively unfair advantage for one side of the game. And that's what we're seeing right now. And I'm sure pitchers would scream and yell about what happened during the steroid era. Most of the pitchers who are in the big leagues right now weren't pitching during the steroid era. So I'm not exactly feeling for them. Open lines at 800-919-3776. Pablo is in Brooklyn. Next, Brooklyn, Pablo, and a hissy. Yes. Hi, Pablo.
How are you? How are you today?
Good. I don't know why I just said all of that. How you doing?
Good, good. I want to talk about the Yankees. First of all, they need to clean the house. It's too many years. Brian Cashman tried to put together a good team, but they don't go nowhere. They don't go to the World Series. Plus, Mr. Boone is doing a terrible job. I know the
How is Aaron Boone doing a terrible job?
Well, look, I want to give you an example. If you don't make your players to play the game with the fundamentals, and you don't show them to care about the team, to care about how to run the bases, how to make decisions, and especially him taking pitches when you're not supposed to take pitchers out of the mound, the consequence is the loss.
Yeah, Pablo, none of that is his responsibility. And thanks for the call. What do I mean by that? When you get to the big leagues, It's not about learning. That's all stuff that you were supposed to have learned on your way up in high school ball, in early prospect ball, in, you know, Gulf Coast League, how to run the bases, how to understand that when the ball is hit to your right and you're on second base, you don't try to advance. That's not something a big leaguer has to learn. That can't be on the manager in the big leagues. You want to say guys don't respond to how he goes about his business? That's fair. You want to get annoyed at the fact that the other night he had, you know, Phil Nevin get tossed and Carlos Mendoza get tossed, but he wasn't? That's fair too, because that was a bad look. That has players questioning, well, wait a second, why isn't the manager out there hollering and hooting about the fact that Odor took what was a ball that was a foot and a half outside as strike three? You know, why is it that the coaches are the ones that are getting tossed? Completely fair, all of that. When it comes to teaching guys the fundamentals, as you put it, there were so many different levels of minor leagues to learn the fundamentals. And when you get to the big leagues, it's not supposed to be about learning the fundamentals. You don't know them by then. That's on you, bro. And you got to learn. Danny's on Long Island. Danny, what's going on with you, bud?
What's going on, Christopher? I got a 20-ounce sirloin on the grill as we speak with
Bourbon
sugar rub. And that bad boy...
What kind of bourbon sugar rub?
Bourbon brown sugar rub. Find it in any supermarket.
Danny, we'll get to the baseball in a second. Talk me through this for a second. When you're using a rub, and I'm new to the rub game, so to speak, and that's not worded well. When you're using a rub, how long in advance are you putting it on? Like, how do you do that? How do you rub it in? What's the secret?
I tenderize the steak around noon, and I put it on the top of the steak, threw it in the refrigerator. So you figured that rub's been on for about 5 hours.
Okay.
Almost like it was a liquid marinade. Same way to do a
liquid marinade. All right. Well, that I didn't know. Okay. That I thought you did a little bit later on as opposed to a marinade, but that's good to know. Thank you.
And that rub and that steak will be working its way through my intestines tonight as we watch the Yankees make more unforced errors on the base pit. But listen.
And perhaps speeding up the process.
Yes. The pitchers in Major League Baseball have been doctoring balls and doing whatever they can since Ty Cobb, before that, whatever you want to go back. They were doing it last year. They were doing it the year before. Whatever they can do. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to blame the pitchers. There's a stat for everything. There's a stat of how many guys have singles on their birthdays. How many singles and runs have been taken away this year because of the shift? Because I watched Aaron Judge with the bases loaded against the Sox drill a ball up the middle the other night, which was a two RBI single written all over it, and the guy was standing behind second base, and they turned two, but a run scored. So if you multiply that by every team in every game that one run is being taken away, which I think it will probably be more, then you may have your runs. You may have your – because the inning continues, you have more things going on. And now once you also have the shift, you have batters taking a different approach. It's like going three wide receivers on one side of the field. I can't throw the ball there. I can't hit the ball to right field if there's four people standing out there. Now I'm in your head. So I have to try to adjust what I do, and I strike out.
But here's the problem, though, Danny. I don't disagree that the shift has had an impact on the game, but – where Major League Baseball is trying to fix this, they screwed it up by messing with the baseballs this season, and that has amplified the sticky stuff. You're right, the sticky stuff has been going on for a while, but that's all they can do right now to try to even out the playing field. They messed with the baseballs, not understanding the impact that they were going to have. So let's try to fix that, not by fixing our mistake. Let's fix the pitchers who have been using this stuff for the longest time. Let's blame them.
My son is a varsity baseball pitcher. Matter of fact, he pitched a shutout yesterday.
Yeah, very nice.
Last year, we were in City Field, or the year before, the ball got fouled back, and we grabbed it. The seams on that ball were so deep into the actual ball, it bear no nothing related to a ball that my son had, and I had one from 1975 in my drawer. It was complete. The ball used to be pro hitter. Well, now all of a sudden we've raised the laces a little bit. Maybe the pitchers are getting a little looser. Well, then you know what? Learn to bunt. Learn to hit the ball the other way. These people, like I said, the shift solves the whole thing, because the shift tells people you can't hit the way you've always hit, so you have to change your approach, which you can't do when you're 25 years old and been swinging the bat the same way since you were 7. You have to. So now, if I have to hit a different way, I strike out, and that's what's happening. Put the infield back where they're supposed to be. No infield is allowed on the outfield grass, and players will spray balls all over the field, and those line drives to right field will once again fall into the grass, and we'll all be happy.
There, so Danny, thanks for the call. There was one last week. I'm trying to remember exactly when it was, but Judge was going back on a ball in the corner that ended up being a home run, and I believe it was Odor, was basically maybe 40 feet from Judge, maybe. Like, he wasn't even just on 10 feet out onto the outfield grass. He was 60 feet on the outfield grass. You know, the ball ended up barely getting over the fence, I believe. Nah, maybe it even hit the fence. I don't remember specifically the game. But this happened, and you had the second baseman who was all the way out there trying to help out in some way. Just freaking bizarre. Jay's in Newburgh. He's next. 98.7 ESPN. Hello, Jay.
Hey, Chris, what's going on?
How are you, bud?
Good. I just want to, the game is definitely getting to a point where it's unwatchable. And it's a shame, because I remember seeing, as a kid, you know, going to the Yankee Stadium, going to Yankee Stadium with my dad, you know, and I fell in love with the game, you know, and I tried to, make my kids, my young guy, he's 8 years old, try him to watch it. He cannot watch 30 seconds of it. It's a shame, you know, between the, and I get, the Commissioner Manfred trying to, insert different ideas into the game to try to make it better, but it just totally has backfired on him, you know, with the shifts, the baseball, and now with the sticky stuff and with the pitches, allowing the pitches. It's kind of unwatchable now. It's a shame.
Listen, I appreciate that, and thanks for the call. It's unwatchable in that it takes entirely too long, and you have to adjust to make your game entertaining. That's just all there is to it. There's a reason that the NFL protects quarterbacks like they do. Quarterbacks are the game. Garrett Cole was flat out comical today. Finally facing the media in advance of his start tomorrow against the Minnesota Twins, and talking for the first time since Josh Donaldson openly said, is it a coincidence that Garrett Cole's spin rate was way down this past week in his last start, and he didn't pitch as well after Major League Baseball started to sniff around and provide what was going to be a roadmap, so to speak, toward pitchers not using materials? Well, let's listen to Mr. Cole speaking earlier today. First of all, responding to the accusations from Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, I mean, I was made aware of it this week. Obviously, you know, it's undesirable, but I understand this topic is important, you know, to everybody that cares about the game. And in regards to Josh specifically, I kind of felt it was a bit of low-hanging fruit, but he's entitled to his opinion and, you know, to voice his opinion. So I have issues, you know, not issues. I just have other things that I need to, you know, keep my focus on. So respectfully, I can't worry about that type of stuff, but I would say that, you know, as a member of the executive council, you know, in the union, and part of my job, part of my role there is to facilitate communication about really all things involving the game. And, you know, I'm open to doing that. That's part of my role. So if anyone has a concern regarding anything, you know, we're always available to reach out and talk to if there needs to be some clarification and whatnot.
Yeah, that's Garrett Cole basically saying, hey, Josh, you got a problem? Come to me. Yes, I'm on the Baseball Players Association Council, and certainly you could talk to me about it. But if you got a problem, son, come talk to me. That was part one. Part two was when Ken Davidoff specifically asked whether or not he was using one of the sticky products called Spider Tech.
And have you ever used Spider Tech while pitching?
I don't.
Hello?
I don't know. I don't quite know how to answer that, to be honest. I mean, there are customs and practices that,
to be honest, he wasn't being honest there, but let's continue.
Have been passed down from older players to younger players, from the last generation of players to this generation of players. And
let's blame the old guys.
And, you know, I think there are some things that are certainly out of bounds in that regard. And I've stood pretty firm in terms of that, in terms of the communication between our peers and whatnot. Like I mentioned earlier, this is important to a lot of people that love the game. And this is including the players in this room, including fans, including, you know, teams. And so if MLB wants to, you know, legislate some more stuff, that's a conversation that we can have, because ultimately we should all be pulling in the same direction on this.
Yeah. And notice how he threw it. If they want to start legislating this stuff, it's a conversation we can have. In other words, we're going to go through this with the Players Association before you guys do what you want to do. Because we're not going to just openly say yes to it immediately. As Michael was talking about earlier, pitchers were genuinely shouted down during the steroid era, complaining about the steroids because players outnumber the pitchers slightly. And the overall finances of the game were going to benefit greatly by players getting more money from home runs and more offense. Why? Well, again, more people would be paying attention. It's really absurd to even consider that they'd have to go and talk to the Players Association, but they'd have to have a discussion at least. And the biggest reason why they will crack down hard on this and paint it like a big scandal to a degree, because of what happened with the Astros. Any sort of integrity issue, as they're putting it, is going to be treated as if it is the worst crime in the history of the world when it comes to baseball. Because they looked terrible with how they handled it the last time around. No players getting punished whatsoever for the cheating scandal. Look, they had to do it to get the actual story of what really happened. When players were given immunity, that was the only way that you were going to get the real answers on what the deal was, on how deep the cheating scandal went. But now, when it comes to this, they're going to do everything they can to punish players, do it harshly, and make the players look bad, make the pitchers look bad specifically, if they're doing it, because they do not want any sort of bad backlash like they got after what happened with the Astros for the punishments across the board. I'll tell you, it's a mess. It's a mess. And this, I personally don't think that this actually goes to the level of that cheating scandal. I don't think it goes to the level of steroids or the Black Sox or anything. I think it's below it, but I think it's convenient to be able to go and crack down on it now when you screwed up with how you dealt with the baseballs this past year. They own Rawlings, for Pete's sake. Get it right. Mark in Bloomfield is next, 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Mark, what's up, buddy?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
That comment. Good, good. That comment by Cole was the longest pronunciation of the word yes I've ever heard.
That's a good way to put it.
Hey, listen, before I get to my point, I just want to give you a top five steak rub, if now that we're maybe talking about it.
So all right, well, am I going to turn that down? You do what you have to do.
Yeah, go for the Brazilian steakhouse rub.
Oh, I've been to a Brazilian steakhouse once. That's where they got the red card and the yellow and the green card, and you flip it if you want them to keep bringing meat.
Yes. Yeah. Big fan of the color green. So try that. You won't be disappointed. But to my point, I just want to, you know, the new collective bargaining agreement is coming up, and baseball always likes to pull these tricks with the baseball, trying to keep the stats low. And I think it kind of went the other way along with this pitching issue. So now they're trying to pull it back a little bit. But I think in the end, the hitters were getting annoyed seeing their stats being driven downward in a contract, you know, a new CBA year. And that's
I don't even think it's a really CBA year. I think it's just bad for everybody if that's happening. And look, they're trying. I get it. They were trying to make it a little bit more even for pitchers, but they went too far with whatever they were doing to the baseballs, and now they're in this situation. They can never seem to quite get it right.
Yeah, I mean, we're coming off of a decade where $200 million contracts made us blanch, and now we're into the $300 million range. So I think there's new money in the league. You know, the Mets have a new owner, and I think it's scaring some of them. That where is this going to end? You know, if you have owners willing to go into the $300 and $400 million level, you know, what's DeGrom going to get? You know, it's getting to that point where you got to start thinking about how to keep the market down. And that's what I think we're witnessing now.
I appreciate the call. And look, DeGrom is going to get what DeGrom's going to get. So I think that was happening without any of this anyway. But when you're that level of pitcher, it's a foregone conclusion. I mean, he signed a ridiculously cheap deal to begin with. And remember, he can opt out after next year. The Mets are going to take care of him before that happens, especially with what's going on this season. But for other pitchers, I'm sure that teams are going to look at their numbers and raise an eyebrow now if their free agents this coming off season. Well, wait a second. Did your numbers all of a sudden go up last year? Why did that happen? Is it because we messed with the baseballs and you were using some sort of substance to grip the baseball? Maybe. When you hear the numbers like 70 and 80% of pitchers are using it, I mean, to me, it's not like that just started. Like, what's the biggest difference this year? That the baseballs don't travel as well. That's the biggest difference. Let's spend a few minutes on Jim Fossil. A genuinely good guy. Really was. And you heard Kerry talk about him. He obviously knew him more intimately than any of us would. But, you know, I covered the team a little bit during those days. And as far as how Fossil treated people, that was impressive to see. It truly was. I'll remember a few things about him. The introductory press conference when he got the job, he came across as a regular guy, but a guy that the opportunity meant so much to. And I was running the board for the Giants broadcast back at the station that first year. And that loss to the Vikings was just absolutely crushing to see. And to have that 9-point lead and to get them where they did with Danny Cannell in 1997. Danny Cannell as their quarterback. And, hey, Danny's a nice guy, but, you know, come on. Even Danny would admit that that season, to go 10-5-1 that year was as impressive as could be. And as a Giant fan, at the very least, you felt like you had the right guy in place. But that was just an absolutely brutal loss to the Vikings. And one of the memories of that is, I said earlier, it was George Young's last game as Giants general manager. And he sat on the bench on the Giants sideline for a good hour after that game was over. And that was just a rough way to go out as GM. But Fossil, you know, was he an incredible coach? They had some times where it got really bumpy. There was the play calling issues that went back and forth. First, he was calling the plays. And then you'll remember he turned it over to Sean Payton for a couple of years, including during the Super Bowl run. And then he took it back over in 2002, shortly after Peyton's mother had passed away. And that was not a good situation between him and Payton. It kind of distanced them. Payton, I saw him talk about that on a tape from an interview several years ago, and how it really rubbed him the wrong way, but they were still able to work very well together. Felt like Fossil had kind of put him in a bad situation to where there was a play at the end of the first half of a game that year. I think it was against Arizona, where with 22 seconds left, Peyton assumed that they were going to be taking a knee. They didn't, and Collins ended up throwing an interception. They didn't even have timeouts, but Fossil wanted to give a crack at it, and basically he left Peyton out to dry on the decision-making of it. So that was one of those instances that wasn't his best moment. I just remember the guarantee itself was on one of those Wednesday press conferences during the week, if I'm not mistaken. And they had been criticized so much for having a team that was supposed to be pretty good but was underachieving at the time. But I don't know that anybody was really thinking Super Bowl. They did have a really good defense, but it was also a defense that they would tell you how good they were, but in some pretty important situations, late in games, they weren't as good as they wanted to believe they were. Kerry was talking about the offense really coming around and making big plays after that. That 41-0 game, after beating the Eagles the previous week, that 41-0 game was a three-hour party at Giant Stadium. Because they were just destroying the Vikings from the get-go. And, you know, it was almost, it wasn't directly related, but it was a little bit cathartic considering what had happened with the Vikings a few years earlier. But Fossil getting that chance to go to the Super Bowl, he and Billick were very close. I remember being with Mike, because Mike had his Sunday night shows for NBC at the time. And he had arranged, because he and Fossil had become close, Francesa this is, to get he and Billick on together for an interview for his local NBC show. And it wasn't airing Sunday night. It was airing during the week. It was like a Super Bowl preview show. And you could tell the respect that Billick had for Fossil at the time, because here are two Super Bowl coaches coming to do a show that is in one city in New York. It wasn't a national thing. It wasn't a network thing, but you could just tell how much Billick loved Fossil. And we know that they had worked together before, but there was that relationship, and Jim would do things like that. Didn't have to go do that for Mike, but hey, let's see if we can get Brian Billick to come over too. And he did do that. And it was a really kind of a neat moment that led up to the game. The game itself, we know what happened. It was a mess, and, you know, the interception from Jesse Armstead that got returned for a touchdown with the holding call on Keith Hamilton. You know, you could say what you want about the game being able to go in another direction because of that. You never know. I heard Ernie say that earlier today. That was a game where they just absolutely were outclassed by an all-time great defense. And there was no getting around that. And that's not a knock on the Giants. The fact that they went to the Super Bowl that year was as impressive as could be. And Fossil was a guy that the players respected a lot because he was a player's coach. But that got away from him toward the end. And when you're too much of a player's coach, at times there's a lack of discipline. And with all the injuries that they dealt with in 2003, in addition to, you know, lack of discipline in some spots on the field, that made it all the more difficult when Fossil got let go. Around 9/11, the guy was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Put together a huge golf tournament in Westchester, raised so much money for the families of firefighters and first responders. Just felt an incredible bond with them. And we all remember Bobby V, and we all remember Joe Torre and the Yankees and the Mets. The Giants were incredibly involved in that. Not singling out one team over another or anything like that. But Jim Fossil was a guy that went above and beyond his responsibility in this city as head coach of the Giants, took that incredibly seriously and did so much to raise as much money as possible and made as many personal experiences for people to bid on in packages to spend time with him. And I'll share one personal story with you that's just pretty funny that I'll always remember about him. And it was, I was doing an appearance at Hooters in Midtown with the Hooters calendar girls, and they were there signing the calendar. And Jim came in. This was after he lost his job as head coach of the Giants, but was still living in the area. And he had about five guys with him. And these were a couple of firefighters and a couple of other guys, guys who had bid $10,000 on a package to spend the day with Jim Fossil. And they came into Hooters, and, you know, Jim probably wasn't thinking necessarily about running into Hooters, but there he is, and he's having an absolute blast with these guys. It's not just hanging out with them because you have to. He's connecting with them on every level, and he had some fun. He had a couple in him, that's for sure. But he was amazing with this crew. To see him treat fans and people the way he did that day was just absolutely great. And, you know, it wasn't just because, like, it wasn't just treating the staff that way because you have attractive women there. No, he was treating everybody the same way, and it was awesome to see. It really was. To me, I think probably a little underrated in Giants history as a coach, as a guy that was pretty good and probably doesn't quite get the respect that he deserves, but just a good, you know, just a good man in a lot of ways. And look, you know, Jim, I'm sure had his foibles. I'm sure there were reasons he didn't get an opportunity to be a coach a second time around. The one other thing I will remember too is that if you'll remember when he was the Giants head coach, he and his wife had their kids, and Jim had a child out of wedlock prior to being married that he had never really connected with. And he took that opportunity to connect with that child. And, you know, it was a big thing publicly at the time, but he not only did it because it was the important thing to do and because he wanted to do it, but he also understood what the Giants as an organization, you know, inside a family were about and what something like that would mean to Wellington Mara as well. And that's not the only reason he did it. It's not the main reason he did it. But I know for a fact how much he knew that Wellington Mara really approved of it. Like, Wellington Mara was a father figure to a lot of people. And I don't specifically know what that direct relationship was, but I do remember that thinking, yeah, he probably sees him very much as a father figure here, because the respect that he had for the family was immense. So I was saddened to hear about Jim Fossil's passing, and really appreciated the fact that Kerry Collins gave us the time that he did. Brian in Jersey City wants to check in on Jim Fossil. Brian, what's going on?
Yes, hi, Colin. This is from a former sports talk show host, and the reason why he may have never gotten a head coaching job because he was perceived by the league as not a 80-hour-week guy. He wasn't dedicated or...
Well, who said that?
You want me to tell you?
Sure.
Mr. Francesa.
Okay, well, then, I mean, that's what he said. That's maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Who knows? I mean, listen, I think Jim, I can't sit here and tell you I know behind the scenes exactly why. I've heard different things as to possibilities, but there's nothing I ever heard that was locked in as fact as to why that would be the case, as to why he never got another opportunity. There were plenty of different theories that went around, and that was certainly one of them.
Yeah, the Washington job, he came close.
Yeah.
But then Snyder went the other way to bring Gibbs back, and that, you know.
Well, it's hard to argue with bringing back Joe Gibbs, and appreciate the call, Brian. I mean, Joe Gibbs is the heart and soul of that franchise's history. So I can't ever, that was the one thing I could never knock Daniel Snyder for, you know. So it wasn't one of those things where I'd look at it and say, well, he completely got hosed in that situation. Did he deserve another opportunity? Maybe he did. You know, football coaches in particular, I don't think any of us really have the full appreciation for what that life is like, or what it is perceived to supposed to be like. The 80-hour a week, 100-hour a week thing is very real. It's very real. Guys sleeping in offices, that happens. Guys living on 2 and 3 hours sleep a night. Yeah, that's happening quite a bit. Like, that happens all over the country in the NFL and in college football. It happens all the time. I think the lifestyle in the NFL has gotten a little bit easier, not during the season, mind you, but during the offseason. Like, because of the nature of college recruiting, I've known so many coaches who have done both who absolutely prefer the lifestyle of the NFL, because you do get time with your family and you do get a little bit more time to relax. But, you know, a football coach is supposed to be somebody that goes 24/7, 365. Rarely takes a vacation, right? If that was the knock on Fossil, and that's one thing that I had heard. I don't know if that's true, but it was one thing that I had heard. Maybe that's the reason. There were always a lot of different theories, but never anything that was really concrete. Never anything that was really responsible to say. Let's put it that way. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. I want to spend a couple of minutes here on the Knicks. And when you watch what's going on with the Nets, it's hard not to take into account the success of what's happening in Brooklyn when you're trying to evaluate what you should be doing in the future with the Knicks. And I know fans so much love the idea of homegrowing your own guys and seeing them become superstars and build the championship from the bottom up, that is not today's NBA. Not in any way is that today's NBA. So for all the guys who have called up, and let's continue to see the development of RJ Barrett. Let's continue to see development of all the other younger players. Maybe Kevin Knox at his young age can still develop into a player. And let's turn this Knicks team into one that can take the next step when we continue to draft well and get young players in here into our system with Tibbs and really go from there. That's not the way it's done. The way it's done now is to go and get big-time players when they're available. This is nothing new. I am not shedding any light here to those who have been sitting in the dark, but I have heard an awful lot of fans call up and want to talk about the notion of just not going out and doing something big, but instead continuing to build with Julius Randle, and let's continue to let this take 3 and 4 and 5 years. Guys, it got sped up this year, and that's a good thing. It doesn't mean that this team next year, if you have it constituted in a very similar way, is going to go and do the same thing that they did. In fact, I would expect them to take a step back if you kept it as presently constituted. If you brought back everybody that was a part of this past year and run it back, there's no need to do that. You have to get better. And of course, when you look at the Nets, how did they do it? They developed those young players, and when they were ready, they traded them away. Which brings us to Damian Lillard. Now, I'm not letting this go anytime soon, folks. $75 million in cap room this offseason. There are only a couple of players that are worth bringing in as big-time free agents, and we know that Kawhi Leonard's one of them. But the bigger issue is Damian Lillard going to want to come here and be a New York Knick? What do the Knicks have that is going to help them in procuring a player like that, in trying to get a player like that to recruit Kawhi Leonard to come and play with him here? Well, a big part of it is Johnny Bryant, who is on the Knicks staff. Johnny Bryant's one of the assistant coaches, and he is somebody that Damian Lillard is exceptionally close with since the time he was in seventh grade. How close is that relationship? This is Damian Lillard a couple of years ago at the All-Star game about his relationship with Johnny Bryant.
Johnny, that's my big brother. You know, I remember literally being in the seventh grade, getting ready for an AAU tournament, and Johnny was in college at Utah. And, you know, they would come back in scrimmages outside, on outside courts with no net, you know, that type of struggle, that type of background. And, you know, I'm happy to see his success as a coach as well.
These guys worked incredibly hard together. Bryant helped mentor Lillard all the way up through AAU, all the way up into the pros. And remember, Damian Lillard went to Weber State. There are not superstars that come out of Weber State very often. So when you have somebody like that and a relationship that he does with Johnny Bryant, that's a huge, huge advantage for the Knicks to have that guy on their staff. Because, yes, Lillard's close to him, but that really sets the tone when you have somebody that you have a comfortability with already there in the situation. This is now about building relationships in the NBA. Leon Rose, World Wide West, were brought in to run the Knicks because of relationships. They had to turn and build the roster into something that could be competitive, which they did this year. But more importantly, they had to rebuild the entire image of the organization, not among the fans, but among the players. Because from the outside to the players, it looked like it was a giant mess, which it was, which it was. But now you've got some people who carry clout around the league in a position of power. One thing to remember is that the position that these guys are in right now, they're positions they've never been in before. So they have to earn respect among agents, among players in another way. So you have Tom Thibodeau come in, but they also bring in a couple of guys on his staff, like a guy like Johnny Bryant, relationship guy, has a great relationship with Lillard. If you're Lillard, and this is somebody that's been as close to you as he has been for his entire life, wouldn't you think that that would work in the Knicks' favor when you're evaluating what you want to do? And here's the other part that's even better. Bryant had been rumored to be in the mix for the Trailblazers head coaching job. I've checked with a few people. That's not the case. The Knicks don't anticipate Bryant going anywhere. So if he's staying, he's going to be a big part of that recruitment. And if Lillard comes, I'm willing to bet that he's going to do his damnedest to try to get Leonard to come and work on this together.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.